Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Sunday, September 19th, Pope Francis says that when we serve others, we receive God's embrace. A major safeguarding event opens in Warsaw, Poland, and thousands of Haitian migrants stuck on the US-Mexico border are to be flown home. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo. Addressing the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square for the Sunday Angelus, Pope Francis reflected on the theme of service, saying that when we serve others, we receive God's embrace. Christopher Wells tells us more.
La grandezza e la riuscita agli occhi di Dio hanno un metro diverso.
In God's eyes, Pope Francis said on Sunday, greatness and success are not measured by social position, job title, or wealth, but by service, not on what someone has, but on what someone gives. The Holy Father looked to the day's gospel where Jesus' disciples were discussing among themselves which of them was the greatest. Jesus responded with harsh words that are still valid today, the Pope said. If anyone would be first, he must be last of all and servant of all. The Pope acknowledged that the idea of service might seem a bit hackneyed, worn out by use. But he insisted that it has a precise and concrete meaning in the gospel. It means acting like Jesus, who had come into the world not to be served, but to serve.
Gesù, proprio per illustrare questo, dopo aver parlato del primato del servizio, compie un gesto.
Therefore, Pope Francis said, if we want to follow Jesus, we must follow the path of service that he himself traced out. Our fidelity to the Lord depends on our willingness to serve, the Pope said, adding that the more we serve, the more we are aware of God's presence. When we serve others, we in turn discover God's love and embrace. In Sunday's Gospel, Jesus explains this by bringing into the midst of the disciples a little child, a symbol not so much of innocence, but of littleness. It is the little ones that we are called to serve, those in need of receiving who can give nothing in return. In welcoming the most needy and the most marginalized, Pope Francis said, we welcome Jesus because he is there. Pope Francis invited us to ask ourselves, in response to the challenge of the gospel, whether we are truly interested in those who need our help, or whether we are like the disciples in the gospel, seeking our own personal gratification. In concrete terms, do I dedicate time to a little one, to a person who has no means of repaying me?
E che c'è più gioia nel dare che nel ricevere.
The Pope concluded with a prayer to the Blessed Virgin Mary, the humble servant of the Lord, asking her to help us to understand that to serve does not belittle us, but helps us to grow. I'm Christopher Wells.
As the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors holds a major conference in the Polish capital of Warsaw, the painful history of Eastern and Central Europe is coming to the fore. Much of the region suffered for decades under the iron fist of communism and the Soviet Union. Throughout those years, the church in many countries was seen as a stronghold against oppression. Now, 30 years after the fall of the Iron Curtain, another side of that history is showing its face, as the church seeks to root out the scourge of clerical sexual abuse. The conference being held in Warsaw from Sunday until Wednesday is helping the church in Central and Eastern Europe confront the past and move forward by safeguarding her most vulnerable members. Professor Hanna Suhoka is one of the organisers of the Warsaw Safeguarding Conference and a former Prime Minister of Poland. She spoke to Devon Watkins about the role history plays in the Church's response to the sexual abuse crisis.
In many countries, even in Poland, even 10 years ago, it was such a thinking that the pedophilia and the sexual abuse are typical for only Western churches, not for Eastern, because not for churches in communist regime, because the churches in the communist regime were under oppression, etc., etc. It was not place for sexual abuse. Now, year by year, we can recognize that's not true, that the behavior was also the same as in Western countries. And now we also have to find the solution and answer in just way the question which has been put, what we can do in our countries. By living for so many years under communist regime, we also should now make a cleansing with our past concerning moral behavior of church in the time. So it is exactly one of the most difficult questions. And you know, I also can give you some examples that now we have in Poland some decisions taken by the Holy See, by Vatican, concerning famous bishops. They played very important role in communism time. But now suddenly we can see the other side of their behavior. That they were very active in fighting against communists, in giving help to oppositionists in communist time, but on the other hand, they also were responsible for sexual abuses, or maybe they cover, or maybe some of them were also involved. So now it is exactly a challenge for the Polish Catholic Church, and also I think the same situation as other post-communist countries, that we have to give clear answer. Yes, we were also saints. Yes, we are not only saints in the time of communism.
That was Professor Hanna Suchocka, one of the organizers of the Warsaw Safeguarding Conference and a former Prime Minister of Poland. In world news, more than a month after the seizure of power, tensions remain high in Afghanistan. Several attacks against the new leadership were carried out on Saturday in Jalalabad. Most recently, the Taliban have excluded girls from Afghan secondary schools after they ordered only boys and male teachers to return to the classroom. Nathan Morley reports.
A Taliban statement said that secondary classes would resume over the weekend, but made no mention of girls or women. Touching on the subject, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres addressed the crisis in Afghanistan, saying the situation remained unpredictable.
And our duty is to engage. Based on what we can deliver, and what we can deliver is essentially humanitarian aid at the present moment, and to engage in order to explain to the Taliban how important it is for them to have an inclusive government of all the different ethnicities. Women must be able to work, girls must be able to have all levels of education, and at the same time to cooperate with the international community fighting terrorism in an effective way. And then we need to mobilize the international community to provide humanitarian aid.
Since the Taliban were removed from power in 2001, enormous progress has been made in improving Afghanistan's education enrollments and literacy rates, especially for girls and women. Shortly after taking power, the Taliban said the rights of women in the country would be respected within the framework of Islamic law. Separately, earlier this week, a top American general confirmed that one of the last U.S. military operations in Afghanistan killed an aid worker and 9 members of his family. It was one of the U.S. military's final acts in Afghanistan before ending its 2-decade operation in the country. The chief of the U.S. General Command, General Kenneth McKenzie, said American intelligence had tracked the aid worker's car for 8 hours, believing it was linked to the so-called ISK militants, a local branch of the Islamic State group. Elsewhere, a pickup truck carrying Taliban fighters was the target of a bombing in Afghanistan in the city of Jalalabad on Sunday, according to local media. It came a day after at least 2 people were killed in a series of blasts in the area. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
Afghanistan is precisely the topic that was discussed in Assisi, where the 7th edition of the Courtyard of Francis is being held on the theme of hope. The speakers included Chiara Cardoletti, representative of the UN High Commission for Refugees for Italy, the Holy See and San Marino, who then spoke to Vatican Radio.
So we've just ended an hour and a half of very, very interesting discussion in Assisi, where the subject of the conversation was really the work of the United Nations in Afghanistan. Can it continue? What are the challenges and what are the red lines for the UN in its work in Afghanistan? And it was clearly explained that the Afghanistan is currently going through a very serious humanitarian situation, with more than 39% of the population currently in need of humanitarian assistance and lots of displacement. And that for the United Nations was essentially vital to remain. Our High Commissioner Grandi has explained after his mission to Afghanistan last week that the humanitarian situation is desperate. And therefore, for us, those organizations that have remained, there is now the challenge of how to operate with this new administration, this new counterpart that we have, who are the Taliban, and how to establish a relationship, establish a dialogue that would permit us to work. And certainly one of the biggest challenges for us is access, security of our staff, but also the possibility of our colleagues, female colleagues, staff, to be able to work in Afghanistan as without, first of all, obviously, it's a right that we should be able to promote and ensure, but also because without the access, without the female colleagues, we would not have access to the women of Afghanistan. So these guarantees were given to the United Nations, and that's why we are there. But of course, this approach to the engagement with the Taliban will have to be assessed on the basis of their actions and on the basis of the results that we will have.
That was Chiara Cardoletti, representative of the UN High Commission for Refugees for Italy, the Holy See and San Marino. And finally, thousands of undocumented Haitian migrants in a makeshift camp under a bridge straddling the Mexican-US border are going to be flown home by the US government to end a crisis of enormous proportions. James Blaise reports.
The Haitian flights start today, and there'll be 8 per day until the backlog's cleared, depending on the capacity of how many can be received by Haiti in staggered stages. As things stand, more than 10,000 men, women and children are in a camp under a bridge linking Ciudad Acuna in Mexico and Del Rio in Texas. This location has no running water apart from the Rio Grande, sanitation, food or other basic facilities, in sweltering temperatures reaching 37 degrees centigrade. Refugees are wading and fording the river waist high, temporarily going back into Mexico to buy daily necessities, and the only way they're staying cool is bathing in the river. The situation remains desperate, critical, and bordering on volatile. It's mostly Haitians fleeing the ravages of the recent earthquake, a momentous political upheaval, including a presidential assassination, but there are also Hondurans, Cubans, Venezuelans, Nicaraguans and Peruvians. Last month, almost 200,000 undocumented migrants were detained at the Mexican border, an all-time record. The Mexican government is urging Washington to fund a jobs program to keep desperate, unemployed and often destitute people in their countries of origin basically at home. U.S. President Joe Biden is pledging immigration reform, but it's not coming fast enough for these caravans of migrants. He's already established a task force to reunite hundreds of unaccompanied children with their families. The Mexican government has deployed thousands of National Guard trying to stem this tidal wave of humanity. This is a humanitarian crisis involving an exodus of peoples living south of the U.S. border who are seeking a better life in the United States. They're desperate and determined. For Vatican Radio, James Blizz reporting.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, please visit our web portal at www.vaticannews.va, where you can also find all our broadcasts in podcast form. And don't forget to catch the latest updates on our Facebook page and Twitter feed. Many thanks go to Adriano Vitali in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo.